Moradim l'simcha. We're holding at the Mishnah. We're going to continue on, Bezrat Hashem, from the Mishnah over here on Daf Mem. Okay, so, on this night of the first day of the Omer, Tavshin Pei Beit, let us begin here on the Mishnah, on Daf Mem. But before we begin, maybe we'll give people some chance to get in over here to remind you that in the event that you didn't have bagels for your matzah for Pesach, so you were basically paskening like one of the approaches that we have here in the sugya. I told you we would get a little chance. We'd have a chance in Erev Pesach because of the rush. But to discuss a bit what the Gemara is coming out over here, because the Gemara says that even though you actually had boiled the dough in the first place, since you had a afya, since afterwards you baked it, so therefore it would be considered to be kosher matzah. And the chiddush would be that you shouldn't think that this was not called lechem oni because of the fact that it's not really poor man's bread. I mean, bagel's pretty expensive stuff. You know, it's high-quality stuff. But nonetheless, it's called lechem oni as long as it's not enriched with other things. That's what we even call in English, enriched. So that is lechem oni as opposed to something which is enriched, which reminds me that Richie has shown up, so we'll be able to start the Mishnah in time. But as I mentioned to you earlier, there's a very big machlokas we've shown him over here about what it is that we're referring to. According to the Rabbi Natan, the issue about the need over here to bake it in the tanur, the Rabbi Natan paskens like that in the Indian of needing to take off challah, that there is no need to be bake it afterwards. It's considered to be real bread, and it's going to be b'chayev and reishis, that is to say challah, even though it was never baked. So there's two different approaches to all of this. First of all, among the Rishonim, I mean, one is there really a fundamental connection between the chiyev of challah and the definition of the Birkat HaMotzi? So that itself is a question that comes up in Brachot and in Psachim about what bracha to make on this. If you can't make a bracha on the pot, then the question is, how would that influence the calling this lechem bichlal? If it's not lechem, so then forget about the question whether it's lechem oni. It wouldn't be called lechem. According to Rabbeinu Tam, the issue involves the way in which the dough itself is handled prior to the boiling. So the question is like this. This Gemara, according to Rabbi Natan, that insists that it's only considered to be bread after afiyah, there's two possibilities. Where we're talking about a large chunk of dough that you're going to boil, a large chunk of dough, which is called an ashashit gedola, that is basically considered to be bread because it has a tzura of lechem. Plus, there's another issue. How soft is the dough? So if the dough gives you some kind of pancake-like effect, so it's mixed with a lot of water, and so if it comes out to be very soft, and that's b'lilato raka, so then and only then does it need to be baked, according to Rabbi Natan. But if it were a hard piece of dough, then he holds that it's considered to be complete bread, both for gabi the din of matzah, and the gabi the din of birchas hamotz, not to mention the idea of challah, even though it was never baked. So we don't paskin like that. However, it certainly is enough to create certain issues about a suffix, the gabi brochas, and so on. And almost all of the poskim do not paskin like the Rabbi Natan, but for a variety of mixed ways of learning the sugyas. And therefore, our Gemara basically goes kipshuto, according to most, and that we would never consider to be a dough that was only boiled to be considered to be normal pot. There is another distinction that I didn't mention, and that is whether your original intent is the definition or the ultimate afia is the definition. So all of these things are elements in coming to the determination of what status it has. So again, intent, thickness of the dough, is it belila raka? Or is it, in fact, belila kasha? The question of whether it maintains its surahs, is it a large piece that is still going to look like a piece of bread? which Lamaisa donut does, looks like a piece of bread. And those things all interrelate with the question of, are we talking about in terms of the din of challah? Are we talking about in terms of the din of birchas hamotzi? And are we talking about the halacha of lechem oni in terms of matzahs for Pesach? Those are the elements, and they need to interrelate in various ways. And now that we're off of talking about enriched bread in terms of lechem oni, it's time for Sir Richie himself to introduce the Mishnah.
You think pizza would be considered lechem oni?
I know that there was a famous pizza shop in Yerushalayim called Richie's Pizza. And that became the Badatz's new vision of soft matzahs for Pesach. Somehow or other, it never turned out to be commercially feasible. Go ahead, Dre.
By the way, let me just say, I'd like to dedicate this session to a very favorite aunt of mine, Zelda Bat Yerachmiel, who was Niftar on the second day of Pesach. Anyway.
Okay, La'aliyat Nishmato. So we continue our examination of the interrelationship of Yibum to the questions of Yerusha, which we've already seen, the relationship of Zika, how it differs in terms of the definition of issues that have to do with family law, that is to say with arayot, versus issues that have to do with the legalities of inheritance. And now we go into a deeper kind of question, as we'll see, which involves not only nachala per se, but what exactly is the nature of the specific brother who actually engages in either yibum and or chalitza, and the difference between him and the other brothers, an issue that we raised briefly earlier in Masechet, and here we're going to go into in much greater detail. And the question of whether the Yerusha that we're referring to in the Torah, which is Yakum Hashem Achiv HaMeit, is a Yerusha that actually takes the place of the normal Seder HaYerusha and stands now against the Yerusha of the father, who would normally be the one to inherit a child. And in this case, because of the Yibum, the father would lose his rights to the inheritance. Perhaps. We'll see that that's a machloket. But let's start with the question, the straight out question of whether chalitza also gives you rights of Yerusha? And alternatively, does giving chalitza deprive you of even the normal rights of Yerusha because you refuse to do Yibum? So let's take a look at this in our Mishnah. So somebody does chalitza, refuses to do yibum. He is like any of the brothers in terms of the nachala, and he does not get any rights to the nachala. We'll see, of course, there's the other question. Does he lose rights? It's saying over here doesn't lose rights either. And we'll see which direction the Mishnah is concentrating on telling us the Chiddush. And what's more, Im yesham av, if there is a father who is living, so then, of course, it's absurd to be talking about any brothers, because the halacha is that a father is the one that inherits a child. So if he would have died without any issues of yibum that were involved, let's say she would have been, the yavama would have been an erva to him, so for sure, the halacha would be that the father would have gotten the Yerusha. So in an event that the father is still alive over here, then the Nechasim go to the father because over here he did Chalitza and he did not do Yibum. But HaKoneset Yevimto, somebody who does do Yibum, Zachah B'Nechasim Shalachiv, even if the father is alive, he would get all of the property that belongs to the brother that died. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, actually, in either event, whether he does Yibum or he does Chalitza, if the father is alive, he gets no rights at all. And the Pasuk that is talking about, Vahaya B'chor Sheteled Yakum, is only in the event that there is no father alive at the time. Okay, so let's first examine the opening of the Mishnah that says that a brother who does chalitza is no different than any of his other brothers. I mean, isn't that pshita? I mean, he didn't come. It says, Yakuma Shem Achiva Meit. He didn't do anything. He ignored his responsibility. Why should he be different? Well, because if the Mishnah hadn't said otherwise, I would have thought that Sakadat Chamina Chalitza B'Mokum Yibum Kaima. Is not Chalitza the other face of Yibum? So if this is the brother who's basically taking the responsibility for handling the issue, so whether he handles it through Yibum or he handles it through Chalitza, I would have thought that perhaps he is the one that is standing in the place of his brother for Nachala. Therefore, Kamash Malan, that not. Says the Gemara, that's not what the tone of the Mishnah is saying, because pay attention to the wording. Why would it say that Harehu ke'echad min ha'achim, if what it's trying to tell you is he does not get any other rights? It should say Eino ela ke'echad min ha'achim mi'boilei. Then he is no different than any of the brothers. Because if the Kiddush is that we don't treat him better, then the thing to say is he's no better than any of the other brothers, right? But when you're telling me he is like the other brothers, then you're telling me I would have thought he isn't even like the brothers and that he lost his rights. That's what the mashmaut of the Lashon is. Okay, says Gemara, you're right. The opposite, therefore, is the Kiddush. Ella. I might have thought that since he makes it impossible to do Yibum, because once one of the brothers gives Chalitza, that's it. Nobody can do Yibum. So maybe we should be Kenesim, and we should say, by messing up the chances of your brother ever having someone who brings children into the world for him, we should take away your rights to that brother's inheritance. You shouldn't even be one of the brothers to split it. Kamash Malan, but he's not any less than the other brothers. That's the way to say the Kiddush. If there's a father, then it would go to the father in this case because he never did Yibum. The Omar Mar, Av Kodem L'cho Yotze Yerecho. This is the normal halacha of Yerusha, that when someone dies, he doesn't not have any heirs in terms of descendants, then the Yerusha goes back a generation. The first node that it hits is where it stops. So if the father is alive, that's the first node upwards that it hits. If the father is no longer alive, then it goes down again from that node to anyone that would have inherited the father. If there's no one alive that would inherit the father, it goes back up again, hits the next available node, which is the grandfather, the father's father. It then splits, it goes down again from that node and would hit any of the cousins that are alive and so on. That's the Seder of Yerusha, and this goes all the way back to Yaakov Avinu, so that there's no one that would not have a Yorish, which is why we know the story of the Ger is the only one that the Torah could be referring to when it says Ein lo Yorish. Hakoneset Yevimto, on the other hand, if he would have married the Yevama, then he does get the Yerusha of his brother. My time. Where do we see that? Because the Torah said, Yakum al Shem Achiv, he should be the one that gets up to take the place of Achiv HaMeit, and Harekam. He did he not? What's the point of saying he did he not? So Rashi indicates that the reason of saying he did he not, which is the way Rashi stuck in a little word in the Mishnah, which is even if he subsequently divorces her. So in other words, what he does is he does Yibum, and the next day he gives her a divorce. Meanwhile, he inherits all those millions. Not bad for a night's work, huh? So you might think that if that's the case, so maybe he shouldn't inherit because he hasn't. I mean, that's really taking the brother's place. Kamash Malan, Yakum Faharikam, he did. It's not up to us to decide how much it is that he's come. So basically, he is the successor, so to speak, of the brother. Rav Yehuda says, now wait a minute. This entire halacha of becoming the one who collects the inheritance is only if the father is not alive. This din does not take the place of a normal inheritance. So if the father's not alive, then anyway, that node, which is the father, now breaks downwards, which is the standard Yerusha, and comes to the brothers. So now the question is, okay, is he the brother that gets the entire part of the deceased brother, the one whose wife who was Meyabim, or does he get only part of it like any of the other brothers? Okay. But, says Reb Yehuda, if the father is alive, then the Torah wasn't even discussing it, because the Torah was talking about where there was a Yerusha to go to the brothers after this brother died. But in this case, if the father is alive, there is no Yerusha to go to the brothers. And therefore, this is not the case that we were talking about. Omar Ula, halachak Reb Yehuda, that's how we paskin. V'chein Omar Reb Yitzchak Nafka, halachak Reb Yehuda. Furthermore, Ula, or some say it was Reb Yitzchak Nafka, came to explain, after paskening like Reb Yehuda, what's the logic of Reb Yehuda? My time at Reb Yehuda? The Sfara of Reb Yehuda is basically an understanding of the pasuk, dichtiv, v'haya ha-bechor asher teled. Strange way to refer to the oldest brother, is it not? And meaning that he should be Yakum in terms of Nachala, instead of the simple meaning of the pasuk. So the idea over here is that the Torah is actually calling him a Bechor in order to give him dinim of a Bechor. Just like we understand that when we call somebody a Bechor, he's only a potential Yoresh. If his father is alive, he doesn't inherit anything. So just like a Bechor, ein lo b'chayei ha'av, af hainami ein lo b'chayei ha'av, this Yavam doesn't get anything if his father is alive. Now, you might say, well, wait a minute now. I don't know of anybody who says that we're going to call him a Bechor in ways that affect the Yerusha. I mean, if you're calling him a Bechor, why doesn't he get a double portion? So let him get a double portion of his father's inheritance, if now we're talking about in the context of inheriting from that node. So you would say, if a Bechor is noto pishnayim li'achar mitata av, af hai noto pishnayim li'achar mitata av. No, come on. The Torah is saying that he should be Yakum al Shem Achiv. He can't be better than the brother. It didn't say Yakum al Shem Aviv. It said Yakum al Shem Achiv. The only thing that the calling him a Bechor could be Nogea is to define how he is Yakum al Shem Achiv. But how could possibly give him more than the brother has in the father? That doesn't make sense. So therefore, it must be Lo al Shem Aviv. Okay, but let me ask you something else. If the Torah has defined the mitzvah of Yibum in this context, in which there is a Bechor asher teled Yakum, so would we not be justified in saying, only in the event that there actually is such a Yerusha, is there a din of Yibum? But if there's no such Yerusha, namely the father is alive, then there would be no din of Yibum either. Because, I mean, once you're telling me that, this is, of course, the furthest reach that we've even discussed so far in the Masechet, of linking Yerusha to Yibum, that not only is Yerusha the definition of, first we thought maybe it was just the idea of giving him, so to speak, a reward for taking the responsibility. Then we realized back at the beginning of the Masechet that the Yerusha actually makes it a definition of a paternal father. They have to share, I mean, a paternal brother. So they have to share that father because they have to share Yerusha. Now we're suggesting that maybe it's actually a definition of where the Chiyav of Yibum occurs. My gosh. And if there is not going to be a Yerusha, so if the father is still alive, then that means that there's no such thing as being Yakum Hashem Achiv Amet, because the Torah was talking about a place where he would really be Yakum Hashem Achiv Benachala. In this case, he won't be. At least that's what Reb Yehuda is saying. So maybe we should say that Eicha Deleka Av Delishkol Nachala. If there is no father, and that the in that case he inherits, then and only then Titkabim Titkaye Mitzvat Yibum. But if there is no father, and therefore we can't be Mekayim the Pasuk of Yakum, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says the Lo Shakil Nachala, so then maybe Enochinami, there should be no mitzvah of Yibum at all. And Lo Titkayim, mitzvah Yibum? No. because the Torah doesn't make Yibum dependent on the actual Nakala, does it? It Yibume Miyabme. He does the mitzvah of Yibum, and then it's telling you what happens if there's a Nakala. Iika Nakala Shikoli, the Ilo Lo Shakil. Now, obviously, the Gemara is pulling, is definitely trying to tickle us a little bit over here, because word for word, what we said earlier in the Masechet was that Yibum Benachala Tal Yerachmana. So by saying, what? I mean, surely you're not suggesting that Yibum Benachala Tal Yerachmana. I mean, it's forcing us to face the deeper meaning of what we meant before when we said that Yibum Benachala Tal Yerachmana. What that meant was that the din of Yibum is dependent on the definition of a brother as being a potential for Nachala. Yes, that was definitely the case. But the Torah never makes the fact of the Chiyav dependent on there actually being a Nachala. It was only trying to define the rules of who is a brother. Why in the world would we have thought that it's telling us something other than if there is a Nachala, then he should get it? But why would it be saying only if there's a Nachala would he do Yibum? That doesn't make sense. Let him do Yibum. If there is a Nachala for him to take, fine, then he'll take it. And if not, not. Okay, now, we brought a moment ago from Rabbi Yitzchak Navcha and from Ula not only the Svara in the Pasuk that Rabbi Yehuda was basing his Psak, that if there is a father, that then the brother doesn't get anything, but actually they paskened like that. So they went ahead and paskened like Rabbi Yehuda, and in fact, Rabbi Hanina Kara was there, and he was saying over in front of Rabbi Yanai, and the Kara, remember, it means that he was a big mumcha in the dinim of Kriya and so on, and all of the tamim and the implications of the tamim. So there he was, and he was sitting, saying over halacha in front of Rabbi Yanai, and he said, halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yanai was upset with that. He said, listen here, Mr. Kara, you can go be Kara, Karya Chabakul. Go ahead and say over your cries. If all you want to do is say things that don't necessarily make any sense, you want to paskin the tamim over here, you can do that. But don't give me this stuff. Why would we paskin the Kribyuda? Ain't halacha Kribyuda. And in fact, there was a Tana. Remember, Tana means somebody would say over brises in front of an Amora. So Tony Tana Kamedir of Nachman, Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. So he was saying over a Kabbalah that he had from a brayta that he was taught that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Nachman said to him, so who is the halacha like? Like the Rabbanan? Do I really need you to teach that? If you just kept your mouth shut, wouldn't I have known that Yochid v'Rabim, halacha k'Rabim? What do you need to tell me that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda? Of course the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Oh, so the Tana said, but remember, we find this all the time, that in saying over the things to the Chacham, sometimes it's clear that there was a mistake, and he tries to keep his memory straight. So they actually would delete. So he said, should I press delete? So Asmayer, should I delete that piece? Because you're saying it makes no sense. So Renato said to him, no, you should not delete it, because I'll tell you what the point is. You actually, initially, it's clear that this is what must have happened. You initially were quoting, halacha is k'Rabbi Yehuda, like we saw happened with Ula and so on. So that must be what you had in your brain. Then what happened is that you were attacked when you said this over to somebody, or maybe it was a generation before you, but we can certainly reconstruct what's happened to this file. So initially, it must have said, halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Someone pointed out along the way that we should be paskening like a rabbi, right? So what you did was you said to them, so what do I do? Should I delete? And they told you, no, just flip. So instead of saying halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, what you did was you said, okay, so what I'll do is I will just say, I must have missed the word ein. It's not usual to say that I switched the whole thing around, not to mention the fact that I never would have written in a brisa halacha k'rabbanan, because that's a given. Everybody would have said pshita. So it must have been that originally it said halacha is actually like Rabbi Yehuda. So what you did was you inserted the word the halacha is not like Rav Yehuda. And the reason you didn't just delete is because then you wouldn't have been able to say anything, because you couldn't say the halacha is like the Rabbanan. And then people that heard Ula, or that heard any other sheet of the Paskin like Rav Yehuda, would not have had your brayta to tell you that the halacha is not like Rav Yehuda. That's what happened. So it must have been that what you originally had said was the halacha was like Rav Yehuda, and then the takana was to tell me ain halacha Rav Yehuda, not to tell me yes halacha Rabbanan, which I'm right in asking you pshita. But you wanted to make certain that people wouldn't follow this mistake. But l'may da'afacht, now that you flipped it to say ain halacha, now you're right. So don't delete it. Shapir afacht. Okay, so this is actual an intelligent processing of the file. Not just, okay, it doesn't match, so let's throw it out. And now we're ready for our hidden Sir Richard.
Where am I?
I don't know where you are, but you're the guy, unless you've been attacked by one of those new Neptune missiles, you better have a good excuse for not knowing where you are.
Here's where I am.
A baseball game?
Let's see.
Anyway.
They can
come to visit.
Only if you have to buy.
Like I say, never call them our sponsor. Hacholetz liyavimto. So now let's discuss the implications of chalitza on the particular brother and on the relationship between him and the chalutza, and the question of whether this relationship extends further into the dinim of tzara, which we're going to look into. So somebody does chalitz. Now, we've already seen the idea that we have a concept, the Rabbanan, called achot chalutzato. And what that means, that by doing the act of chalitza, he is given the dinim as if he is actually related to this woman. So chalitza is similar in people's eyes to an actual get, right? And okay, so this guy apparently was min haTorah, the Zika, made her a wife. Well, I mean, she was a wife to him, so then all of her relatives would be usher. Her sister, her mother, her daughter, right? They would all be usher. So because of the similarity of the chalitza to the grusha, we gave this woman the same halachas, bin Rabbanan, that we would have given to a grusha, midiraisa. Because of that, he is usher to marry any of her relatives, and she is usher to marry any of his relatives, if she had actually been married to him. So those are the relatives, and the Gemara will go through now which it is. So the Mishnah is going to tell us who is included, and in the Gemara we're going to examine whether this is the full list or whether we should also worry about the Shnias and so on. So who? Asur bi'ima. So now he is asur to her mother, to her mother's mother, to her father's mother, to her daughter, to her daughter's daughter, and to her son's daughter, and if she is still alive, he is usher in her sister. Now look, all of these, of course, are exactly the names of the arayas that are usher on a person who marries a woman, whether he's currently married to her or whether he divorced her. So this was the list of all of the arayas in the Torah. And therefore, we give the chalutza exactly the same dinim. He, same way, couldn't have married his divorcee's mother or daughter, whatever. Same thing is true over here. He can't marry his chalutza's mother in both directions. The granddaughter from a son, granddaughter from a daughter, which goes back in the opposite direction of the grandmother or the paternal grandmother, the same thing, one going upwards and one going downwards, and it's the same erva that is listed in the Torah. Now, what about the brothers? Well, the brothers are mutarim, because being as he is the one who did the chalitza, so he removed the Zika from the brothers, and now we look at it as if those brothers had never been particularly related to this woman that ended up being the Yavama who was the chalutza. And now, on the other hand, she, of course, is also asura, as if she were married. So she would be usur on his father and on his grandfather. Now, that's an interesting one, because the grandfather, it would be, she would be the daughter-in-law of his son. But what's the din of a wife in the daughter-in-law of the son? I mean, over there, there would not be an iser to the grandfather, midiraisa. I mean, that is one of the shniot. Yes, it's true. We did extend that upwards, if you remember our list of the shniot earlier. But over here, we seem to be extending it even outside of the midiraisa, because how did it get to a grandfather? So this the Gemara is going to discuss. So she is usher to his father and to his grandfather. She is usher to his son and also to his grandson. Okay, so as far as the grandson is concerned, we're talking about a good Durabonan extension again. So it seems that we're taking for granted that we can extend the dinim, even though the Chalutz herself is a Durabonan, we would extend the dinim of the Arayas Durabonan to the Chalutz Durabonan. We would not consider it to be like a Gezera to a Gezera. We would say, like, look, once we gave her the din of a wife, we're going to give her the full dinim of the wife. That's the simple take on the Mishnah. We're going to see whether that is a correct take when we get to the Gemara. And there's also, of course, Midiraisa. She's also to any of his brothers, because she would be an Eshes Ach. And in this case, she is a Chalutza Sa'ach. And she would be usher to any of the nephews, meaning any of the children of a brother. And that would be an expression of the Eshet Achi Aviv. Because now she would, that would be an iser for that ben, for that nephew to get married to her, because she is the wife of his father's brother, right? Because she basically is now the chalutza. We're pretending that she was a wife. And that would mean that in the son is considered to be usher, because now we're pretending that she is the Eshet Achi Aviv. Of course, the truth is we're not pretending, because she really was, but we'll get back to that in the Gemara. Some of these are actually the Raisas, not because of the chalutza tor, which we're going to point out in the Gemara. And we also have the question of what is the relationship to a tzara. So mutar adam bekrovat tzarat chalutzato va'asur betzarat krovat chalutzato. Now, we examined these cases earlier in the Masechet, and that is that a person, there's no iser if, let's say, there were two women that had fallen to Yibum. He takes one of them, and the other one was the tzora. And we're saying now, a person is not allowed to marry the ones that look like the relatives of his chalutza, as if the chalutza was his wife. Did that extend also to the other woman who was married to the brother that he never gave chalitza to? No, it does not. And as far as the one that he never gave chalutza to, we don't asur any of those relationships. The question of what his relationship is to the tzora proper, we saw earlier in the Masechet, and we're going to see again, that there's a big machlokus about whether the tzora remains asura because of Eshet Ach, since he was originally married to his brother, and in the end he removed the Zika from this house by being chalitz the other one, so now we're back to the Isra of Eshet Ach, or whether we've removed the Eshes Ach, but now there would still be an Isser, because after all, the Torah says you could only relate to one of these wives, either with Yibum or Chalitza. So we have the Kivan Shelo Bana, Shuv Lo Yivne, or we have Bayit Echadu Bone, Ve'eno Bone Shnei Batim. Between those two halachas, what we know is you cannot take the other wife of the brother, having already taken the Yavama, and that is by Techadu Bonet. And furthermore, we know that if you did not do the Yibum, then you cannot go back and take the Tzora because Shuv Lo Yivne. Fine. But what about the other way around? What about these relatives that we just listed? So we said, let's say the sister of his chalutza. Is the sister of his chalutza viewed as an actual erva? Because remember, the sister of the erva is viewed as an actual erva, right? So would we extend this halacha that now that we're viewing her as being osir, the chalutza, so now would the tzara of this relative, let's say if it would be a real achot isha that would have fallen to him from another brother, then it would have potted from Yibam. If we have a fake achot isha, what do I mean by a fake achot isha? An achot of a woman to whom he had given chalitza, and she goes ahead, she's married to one of the other brothers. Now that other brother dies, leaving him with achot chalutzato plus another wife. Would that woman be a tzara of a eshet ach, of an achot ishto? That's the question. Midarabana. Now that seems to be the question. And that's the way we understood the question before. And that is the way that almost all of the Rishonim understand the question. Rashi, however, suggests that the meaning of our sugya, and we're going to see why he does this, because it's very shocking when you first look at it. Rashi says that this idea of being osur in the tzora of a krovat chalutza is not talking only about a case where she went ahead and married another one. Another one of the brothers is married to the achot or the aim or the bat or whatever of his chalutza. It's talking about a stranger is married to this relative of hers, to this sister of hers. And this stranger has another wife. And the most incredible thing that the Mishnah is saying is that even though when it comes to the Diraisa, a tzora is only a tzora b'mokom yibum. Remember, that was like the fundamental idea of the concept of tzora and tzora's tzora way back at the beginning of the Masechet. Rashi incredibly says that the idea over here would mean that the iser of tzorat krovat chalutzato is a departure from the norm of the meaning of tzora, and it would mean that if a person is married together with an achot chalutza, or an aim chalutza, or a bat chalutza, whatever the case would be, to a stranger that has nothing to do with Yibam, that individual who is the tzora will never be allowed to marry any of these brothers. Absolutely wild. But we'll see that Rashi's understanding of the whole sugya is based on an idea of the possibility of mistaken identity. And therefore, it is not really related to the idea of the norms of tzara. But we'll get to that when we get there. So that means there's two very different ways to understand these words of osur b'tzarat krovat chalutzato. The simple meaning, according to most Rishonim, is in the event that one of the brothers had married the sister of the chalutza or the mother of the chalutza and has another wife, that we will treat that other wife as if she's the tzora of an erva. That's the simple meaning. Rashi is saying that any time a relative of this chalutza is married to a person, even not a brother, the other woman married to that person will be asura to the brother that performed chalitza. Quite astonishing. Okay, the first question is, is there a gezera of shniyot in the chalutza or not? In other words, how far did we extend this? We turned the chalutza into a pretend wife, right? So we said, okay, so in the same way that a person would have been usher in the sister of his wife, he's going to be usher in the sister of his chalutza. Okay, but remember we had all of those extensions, minarabonan, of arayot that were in the Torah. Would those extensions apply to the idea of the chalutza as well? Or is that going too far? Is that like making a gezerah to a gezerah? We created the whole idea of a chalutza to be like a wife itself is basically imaginary. So therefore, to say, let's take it a step further and even ask the shniyas, that seems to be going overboard. Now, that's the question. Gazru shniyot b'chalutza o lo? Do we say that be'erva dioraita? Okay, over there, gazru b'rabbanan shniyot. But b'chalutza lo gazru rabbanan shniyot? O dilma lo shna? Well, says the Mishnah, don't we have rayas from the Mishnah Beferish? Look what it says. Hu asur be'ima, hu be'im ima. It only lists the Isuri D'oraisa when it talks about who he is not allowed to marry of her relatives. Why doesn't it mention her grandmother, for instance, right? That was like an obvious extension. So it should have said, he is not allowed to marry her grandmother, right? So why don't we talk about that? Not only ima, but aim ima. It doesn't say aim ima. Doesn't mention the great grandmother. Doesn't mention the great grandmother, does it? It only talks about the two generations mentioned in the pasuk. Isha ubita, isha ubat pita. In the opposite ways, isha ve'ima and isha be'aim ima, but not isha be'aim ima. So why doesn't it mention that? Apparently, because it's not usher, because it's only a shniya, and we weren't going to shniya on tzarot. Well, maybe not. I mean, maybe the reason we didn't mention that is Dilmaina time at Latoni Mishum de Kabbalah Misne Seifa v'ha'achin mutarim. Remember that it was important in the Mishnah to note that it's only the particular brother who gave the chalitza, but any of the other brothers, just because they were zekukim originally, they are not considered to be actually part of this. And therefore, they can go marry whoever they want. So if we would have listed great-grandma, so then I might have thought that when it says, but the brothers are mutter, I might have thought, yeah, the brothers are mutter, dafka in great-grandma. But just in the ones that are direct reflections of the Isser D'oraita, they are not mutter. And maybe we were gozer on the brothers for the Isser Erva D'oraita, and not gozer on the brothers for Isser Yisur D'oraita, but Drabanan, but we were gozer on the actual brother who did the chalitza. So in order to avoid that mistake, we just didn't bring it up. Yeah, that's pretty silly, says the Gemara. I mean, you could have told us aim ima. And you would have just been able to say that aim, both of them, you could have said, are usher, and then say ha'achin mutarim, but just add one word. Just put in the word bekulan. The brothers are mutar in all, and that avoids any mistake. Means we're not gozer at all on the brothers. Okay, I hear you. So, all right, that's a bit of a kasha. So, I don't want to say, however, that it means that you're right, because I'm about to bring you a proof that you're wrong. Because let's look at the next piece of the Mishnah. It says, he asura ba'aviv ubi avi aviv. Now, it says here both father and grandfather. Now, who is Avi Aviv? I mean, I'm assuming it means the choletz, the brother who did the chalitza, and it's because of the fact that this is the grandfather of the brother who did the chalitza. Why? Because this is the erva, she. She would be the erva known as a son's daughter-in-law, because that's what you're saying. The father's father. So she would be the son's daughter-in-law, right? And that would mean that we are including the dirabonan of a son's daughter-in-law, which is an extension of the d'oraisa of a man's daughter-in-law. Here it's a man's son's daughter-in-law, and we're applying it to the tzaras. I mean, that's an assumption. I mean, look, she's definitely going to be usher because, darn it, the father and the grandfather are the father and the grandfather of her dead husband also, right? So it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with her being a chalutza. It's a d'oraisa. So because she, in fact, she is this guy's daughter-in-law because she was married to her original husband. And because of that, there's the extension d'oraisa. It doesn't mean it's because of this new relationship to the brother who did chalitza. It's because she was originally a situation where the grandfather would have ossered her as the dead brother's daughter-in-law, son's daughter-in-law. So it's a difference, right? So I say it's Mishum Misna, because it doesn't matter here whether it's the choletz or because it's the dead brother. Okay, how about this case, all right? It says that she is asura to the grandson, ben beno. Now, why is she asura to the grandson? Must be because it is the grandson, and therefore if it's through the choletz that this is a problem, the reason she is asura is because he would be the, to him, he would be over on the wife of his father's father. That's what you're saying, the grandson. That's why he can't sleep with her. So, but that itself is only one of the shniyos, because otherwise a grandfather's wife is not usher. Their father's wife is usher. Yeah, but here it's the same issue, don't you see? Because even if we're looking at the deceased brother, we would end up with the same iser, because that would be not mishum choletz as eshet avi aviv, but in terms of the deceased brother, then the iser that he would be over and sleeping with her is because she would be the wife of the father of the father's, the brother of the father's father, you see? Because think of it. He is now this, we're saying that the iser over here would be on this grandson, not because of the choletz, but the grandson because of the mace who's to the side of the choletz. But that would mean that it would be his uncle, so to speak, would be the brother's father's father. He would be married to this woman. And that would be the great uncle, which is in fact a shnia. And, but over there, it's because there's a deraisa, because of the achi aviv. Okay, the Eshet Aviv. So here it's the Eshet Avi Aviv. Same idea, the Eshet Achi Avi Aviv is the same thing. Auntie or great auntie, basically is what we're referring to. But wait a minute, says the Gemara. Amema, remember we had the big question before about whether Eshet Achi Avi Aviv is the wife of a grandfather's brother the same as the wife of a father's brother? And Amema said, no, it is not. Okay, fine. It's not a problem, because all Amemar has to do is explain that the meaning of the grandson is not the grandson of this generation. It's the grandson of the Saba itself is what it's talking about. In which case, he's simply identifying it as someone different than we're identifying it. And because of that, the Isser here is perfectly understandable, according to Amemar as well, and except for one little problem. I mean, it's all very nice to say that Amemar would say that when we use the word son's son, what it's referring to is the son's son of the grandpa, meaning the father, the son's sons of the father who did the chalitza, and that would be this grandson's only, his own grandfather. So according to Amemar, all that the Mishnah was saying over here when she said that it's usher to his son, the meaning of his is not the choletz. The meaning of his is to his father. And therefore, it would be basically not ushering the one that we thought it was ushering, but all it's saying is that she is asura to this guy who did the chalitzas, father, to his grandfather, and to his grandfather's son is what it means, which is Shimon's, if we're talking about Reuven dies, and this is now Shimon married, who did the chalitza, we're treating as married to her, this would be basically his father's grandson. Okay? So that way, of course, it would be usher because of the same issue. It becomes a auntie because it's a nephew. Fine. So she was married originally to his brother, Reuven, who was always, we called it, deceased Reuven. So then it would have anyway been usher because of the auntie relationship, which would have been through the mace and not through the actual one who did the chalitza. Yes, says the Gemara, but then what's the point? If that's what it's saying, then it boils down to something we already had before. Because Iachi, hainu achiv uben achiv. So, but then you're saying if it's referring to the grandfather, then that means his son and the son of his son boil down to the equivalent of being his brother, because you said that it's talking about the father's son. If it's the father's son, then it's his brother, obviously, by definition, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about paternal brothers over here. So we listed that already. That's in the Mishnah. So what are you saying? Why are you saying the same person twice? Once you're calling him a brother and once you're calling him a son. I mean, come on. What's the point of that? Whoa, big point, says the Gemara. We're talking about a paternal brother. Yes, there we were talking about the Isser. But when we add the additional case, we're talking about a maternal brother. V'katani achiv mina aim. So basically, we want to know that the Choletz's maternal brother or his maternal nephew over here, meaning the son of the brother through a common mother, is also usher. So therefore, it mentions both of them. Toshma, to Tony Rebbe Chiya, let's see if we can bring a raya about this question of Shnias. Rebbe Chiya, when he said over the women that are usher and the men that are, or who they're usher to, so Rebbe Chiya says, we've got four cases that are d'oraisa, and we've got four cases that are d'rabbana. So, okay, I mean, once we're talking about four cases, it means four cases that the chalutza were treating her to, four cases which would have been usher if she were a real wife, midiraisa, and we've got four shnias that are only usher, midirabanan. Let's go through them. We have the father, his father, that obviously would be nisa d'oraisa because she is kalato. We have his son, his own son. We have his brother and his brother's son. All of those are Isurim d'oraisa if she would be a real wife, because obviously he bring his brother's son, so then she is the auntie to that nephew, and that's one of the d'oraisa. And then we've got four cases that are only midivrei sofrim, and the midivrei sofrim includes his father's father would be usher, his mother's father, his son's son, and his daughter's son. All of those are shniot, and they are applying to the chalutza. Okay, so now I'll show you that it could only be shniot. Let's go through them, right? One of these cases, it says his father's father. Now, why in the world does she, Asura Tamather, marry the father's father? We have the same question that we had before. Isn't it because of the person who did the chalitza? Reuven died, Shimon did chalitza, and now she is being viewed as his son's daughter-in-law as pretending that she was his real wife, right? But a son's daughter-in-law is only a shnia. So this proves that we're treating a chalutza as a wife, even in terms of shnias. Says the Gemara, no, it does not. As we said before, the reason she's asura is because the brother that she was originally married to is also a son, for heaven's sake. So she really is that guy's son's daughter-in-law, not because of the choletz, but because of her original husband. Okay, and what about the next case? The next case is the mother's father, right? So we're talking about now avi imo. And Lechora, why does this aser him? Because to him, the Isra over here is she would be the Kalat Bito. But a Kalat Bito is only a Shnia. So how do you explain that? Must be. And that the Shnia supply. Says the Gemara, no. Here's the same solution. It's not because of the brother. It's because of the brother who died, her original husband. And over here, she is really Kalat Bito, and Kalat Bito is really a Shnia D'Rabbanan, but it's a Shnia D'Rabbanan because of the Isser D'Oraisa extension from her original husband, not because of her bigger chalutza. Okay, what about the Ben Beno? What is the problem over there? The Ben Beno is because Shimon, who after Reuven died, did Chalitza, not Yibum, who were treating her as a wife of Shimon. And the reason that she would be Asura is because she would be the equivalent of a wife of a grandfather. And a wife of a grandfather, right, because this is what we're talking about. We're talking about Ben Beno. So now she is Asura to that boy who is a grandson, so she would be the wife of his grandpa, right? In the other direction now. So that is a shnia, because only the wife of a father is usher, not the wife of a grandfather. No, once again, it would be because of the brother that she was originally married to, Reuven, and she is a auntie. She is the wife of the brother of the grandfather in that event, and that is the Shnia, and that is a real Shnia from the original marriage, not from the Chalitza. So again, we have the problem of what about Amemar? Amemar said that that is not even Usher as a Shnia. So how all of a sudden did it become Usher? Whoa, you're right. According to Amemar, we have no choice but to say that Gazru Shniot b'chalutza, 100%. We've got to say that because otherwise we're stuck. Because what are we going to say? We're not going to be able to say that here he's going to say the same thing he said before. We're going to restate it in terms of grandpa's grandson and not the second generation's grandson. We can't do that over here because then it would be actually an Isser D'Oraisa. Because remember, before we didn't say which ones are Ervas D'Oraisa, which ones are Ervas D'Rabbana. But over here, Rabbi Chiya did, and he said it's a D'Rabbanan. If we would have made it the grandfather's, was the one that is the reference point, and not the Choletz, then it wouldn't make sense in terms of Rabbi Chiya. Because then Reuven's nephew, is the way it would mean, that is a D'Oraisa. And here Rabbi Chiya listed it as a Shnia. So you don't have that option, and therefore Amemar has no choice but to say, whoops, apparently we were Gozer on Shniot. Okay, that's Amemar, but what about us? I'll bring you a raya for you, and you're not going to be able to deny it. Look at this. The next case in the Braita was what? Ben Bito. So his daughter's son. What's the Isser of a daughter's son? Because of the fact that the Choletz, it's the daughter, what would mean that it's his mother's father's wife. And that is only Shnia. A mother's father's wife, remember, is a big extension of the Isserim D'Oraisa. Says the Gemara, no, it would be also over here, maybe because of Reuven, the original brother. Because now she becomes his mother's father's brother's wife. Excuse me? His mother's father's brother's wife is not one of the Shnias, even on a real Erva. There's no such thing. And they'd never made that a Shnia. So don't try to create a new Shnia. Even the people who don't agree with Amemar, they only went so far as to talk about his father's, the father's father's brother's wife. Nobody said the mother's father's brother's wife. So I'm sorry. So you can't answer it. It's got to be because of the Choletz and not because of the father's. You see, Shma Amina Gazru Shneot B'Chalutza Shma Amina. There's no choice. Everybody's got to agree to that one. The relationship to the two women, which are at the end of the Mishnah, Mutar Adan B'Krovat Tzarat Chalutzato V'Asur B'Tzarat Krovat Chalutzato. So now we're going to be getting into that. But before we do, let's hear what Rav Tuvi Bar Kisna says about the din of the Tzora of the Chalutza B'Chalal. Because here we're talking about the Krova of the Tzora. First, let's talk about the actual Tzora of the Chalutza. So the question is like this. A woman gets Chalitza. There's another woman that was married to the brother. And now the Chalitza makes it impossible to ever marry anyone from this household again. So, Kivan Shabana, Kivan Shabana, Shuv Lo Yivne. As we learned, Asher Lo Yivne. So the question is, how does that leave the one who never got Chalitza? If it removes from her the entire Zika that was there in the first place, so then maybe she just goes back to being Eshet Achiv. I mean, I understand that in the event that there was actually a Yibum, so then, of course, the Yibum was matter that entire Bayit. But, I mean, of course, there's still going to be an Isser, in which Bayit Echad Hu Boneh Veino Boneh Shnei Batim, that's an Isser Lav. And so, but it doesn't go back to recreating the original state of the Isser of an Eshet Ach, that's for sure. But what about in this case? The Chalutza, I understand. There the Torah says, Kivan Shlo Banah Shuv Lo Yivneh. Okay, so that's a Lav, and she does not become Eshet Achiv again. But how about the tzara of the chalutza, the other wife who could have been taken initially, and instead he took this one? What does it do with her? Says Rav Tuvi Bar Kisna in the name of Shmuel, haba tzarat chalutza v'lad mamzer. Basically, she went back to being an eshetach, shelo b'makom mitzvah. There's no longer any chiyuv to take her. And because of that, if he actually impregnates her, so then the vlad would be a mamzer, because it's a real eshetach, my taima, the isura kaima. Because according to Shmuel, she goes back to the way she was before. She was an eshetach, and now there was no yibum done for this house. And therefore, the fact that there was a woman who did chalitza, so it's true that we had before a machlokas about whether the one who does chalitza is acting, so to speak, as the representative and the shliach for all of the women in the family. But apparently Shmuel holds that a chalutza does not become that. The chalutza remains. She's a chalutza on her own. And this woman goes back to being what she was. And as Rabbi Yosef points out, well, I think that's the point of the closing of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Mutar Adam Bikrovat Sarat Chalutzato. So a person is allowed to marry the relative of the tzara of his chalutza. Now, why would a man be permitted to marry in this case? Because, you see, if you're going to tell me that the tzara basically had nothing to do with the chalitza, which is basically what Shmuel is saying. Shmuel is saying if the other wife did the chalitza, then the tzara of that wife totally does not relate to the chalitza, and she is left in her original status of an eshet ach. Okay, so then I understand that that leaves her outside of the entire discussion of yibum. So that would explain that if you're saying that, yamrit bishlamat tzora avroi, you're saying that the tzora is out of this. She has nothing to do with this whole thing, and therefore she's not included in the iser of kivan shelo bana shuv lo yivne. She just remains what she was before, and she has nothing to do with the yibum. That would explain why the one who does chalitza is certainly allowed to marry her sister. He's not related to her in any way. Why shouldn't he marry her sister? But if you're going to tell me that both women in the household are actually affected by the chalitza, and the chalitza successfully removed the entire status of the yavama from her, and therefore she is basically not an eshet ach any longer. Okay, so then that means that she is like the chalutza. But if she's like the chalutza, why would he be mutter to marry her sister? I thought we said that you're not allowed to marry the sister of your chalutza. And now we're saying that this woman is essentially the same as the chalutza because that chalutza removed the issue of eshet ach from her. So why does the Mishnah say that it is mutter to marry the relative of the tzora of the chalutza? So that must be that Shmuel is right, and that the tzora is not part of the action over here. She had nothing to do with the chalitza. Says the Gemara, wow, well, I mean, if that's true, so then this is basically, I mean, we had this machlokas, a very important machlokas we had earlier. What is the status of the other brothers? Remember when we were talking about the machlokas, whether they would be chayiv kares? So remember, Rabbi Yochanan Shita over there was, look, that makes absolutely no difference which of the brothers we're talking about, and it makes absolutely no difference which of the dead brothers' wives we're talking about. Basically, there is no chorus that remains from that original marriage whatsoever, whether it's towards the one who did the chalitza or the other brothers who didn't do the chalitza, whether it's about the woman that was married to the deceased who got the chalitza, or whether it's a second wife who was married to the deceased who did not get chalitza, in any and all circumstances. Once the woman falls to yibum, pow, there is no din of eshet ach. So, I mean, here we just proved in the Mishnah that the chalutza is the only one that has to have these consequences of his being unable to marry her relative, like, let's say, her sister. and the tzara is unrelated to the chalitza. So doesn't this show that Rabbi Yochanan is wrong and that there would be an actual iser on the other brothers to take her? Says the Gemara, I mean, Rabbi Yochanan would simply say to you, I mean, what will you think about what you're saying? Fitzbro, what are you understanding over here? Achot Chalutza, you're saying that the Achot Chalutza should definitely be considered to be Asura because she really is the sister of your wife. I mean, what are you talking about? There's no Isser D'oraisa on Achot Chalutza herself. Forget about the Tzora. The Achot Chalutza, you're saying if she's out of the action, so then basically she's going to be the same, if she's part of the action, she's going to be the same as the chalutza. That's ridiculous. The chalutza herself is not really usur. Remember, the whole din of the relatives of the chalutza is only a gezeira d'rabbanan, that people will confuse this din with a real wife that he was megaresh. So once a person is married to someone, even if he divorces her, he, of course, remains usur to all of her relatives forever. Except the sister when his wife dies. Fine, I understand. But any erva that can't be removed, he's going to remain usur to. Because of that, we made a gezeira that said the kashrut of a chalutza. But it's not real that we should say, well, I mean, so in that case, how can we differentiate between the chalutza and the tzor of the chalutza? After all, the tzor is also becoming muteret, according to Rabbi Yochanan. I mean, come on. Amarish Lakish, Kanshana Rebbe, in the very next Mishnah we're going to talk about, how Rish Lakish himself was medayik from that Mishnah, that Rebbe is teaching us very clearly that even though Achot Gerusha is an Isser Midiraisa, but the Achot of the Chalutza is just a Gezerah Derabbanan. So we're going to see that very soon, so I'm not going to go into what the Mishnah said over there, because we'll learn it in a couple of minutes. But the bottom line is that since they're not the same, so, I mean, why in the world would you say that necessarily the Rabbanu would have to be Gozer, the same Gezerah that they made on the Chalutza, who looks like a Grusha? So they're going to make the same Gezerah on the Tzora of the Chalutza. Why? Why should they? She doesn't look like a Grusha. So because of that, we only made the gezeira on the chalutza herself and not on the tzara. That makes a heck of a lot of sense to me. But what I don't understand, says the Gemara, is what is the difference between the two cases? Remember, again, let's just not get confused between what those two cases is. The Mishnah ended with the words that a man is allowed to marry the relative of the tzora of his chalutza. So just explain, yes, of course. Because the woman that he gave chalitza to, she looks like a grusha, as if he was actually married to her, and therefore he remains usur on her relatives. Okay, so explain to me why it says that he is allowed to marry the sister of the tzora of the chalutza. I mean, basically, why do we make this distinction? The truth is, neither of them really have anything to do with anything. I mean, the tzora, as we just explained, I mean, why would we usur her? But, I mean, so then the same thing is true of the other case. The same thing, in other words, the chalutza's tzora is not really part of having gotten this chalitza. But the same thing is true of the relatives, and why would he be usur in the tzora of the krova of the chalutza? Now, let's remember that we had a big machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos, and this is going to make a major difference. Now we understand what the Gemara now says. We had a major machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos, about what the meaning is of the case of the usur b'tzorat krovat chalutzato. So remember that Rashi learns Osir Betzarat Krovat Chalutzato was absolutely shocking. And that what he was saying is that since the sister, let's take the case of a sister, right? So we've got the Chalutza. The Chalutza, we're saying, is like a Grusha. And a Grusha's sister is going to always be Asura. Good. Now, if a Grusha's sister would be married to a brother, and then that brother died. So obviously, if she would fall to this brother, and there's also a tzara, it would certainly aser her and the tzara, because they really are arayas. I understand that. What we're saying over here is that even if she wasn't a grusha and she was just a chalutza, we will also aser the tzora. So in other words, we think, but Rashi disagrees with this, but we think, and this is the pashtas of how to understand the Mishnah, and indeed it's the way that Tosfos and most other Rishonim understand the Mishnah. Being as if she were a grusha and she'd ended up, because of that, having the sister married to a brother, that sister would be a real erva on this guy who was married to her sister once upon a time before the divorce. So therefore, we would be gozer even if it was the tzora, just as if she were a tzora to an erva. Fine. That's understandable. Rashi incredibly says that the iser of tzorat krovat chalutzato has nothing to do with yibum. And that if the krova of, let's say, the sister of the woman to whom he gave chalitza marries a completely unrelated man, marries George, and now George has another wife, incredibly, what, according to Rashi, the Mishnah is saying is that the brother, who we call Shimon always, the brother who is doing the chalitza over here, is not allowed to marry George's other wife? When George divorces her? Like, what in the world would that mean? But that's the way Rashi understands it. So in any event, I mean, the question over here is a question both according to Rashi and according to Tosfos. In both cases over here, whether we're talking about the tzora of the chalutza's sister, or we're talking about the sister's tzora, in any event, there's no real relationship of the chalutza over here to the brother who did the chalitza to either of them. So why are we making a difference between them? It doesn't make any sense to make this takana that there should be an iser in the tzora of the sister of your chalutza. Why? If you're going, I mean, I understand why, but then if you're telling me that we're going to extend it as if it's the same thing as being a real wife, then why would it be mutter in the relative of the tzar of the chalutza? You could say the tzar of the chalutza also looks like a real tzar. Says the Gemara. Now here there's two completely different gears. So it's actually a difference between Rashi and Tosfos. According to Rashi, remember the only explanation that makes any sense here whatsoever to aser a woman who's married to a total stranger and to say that as a total stranger, she looks like an iser tzara. I mean, what in the world would that mean? So the only possibility, according to Rashi, is mistaken identity. And that's exactly how Rashi understands the Gemara. The achot of the chalutza, or whatever relative she has. Now, generally, women rely on their sisters, rely on their relatives. This poor girl, her husband died. She doesn't have any children. She's basically all alone. She's going to have to go to the Rabbanut to get chalitza. Imagine a woman like that knocking on the door of the Rabbanut and facing chalitza all on her own. It's inconceivable. So she's going to take along her sister or her relative, but she's going to go with someone, right? And that someone is going to be related to her. Now, we see them walking into court, okay? People, so let's take a case where we have Rachel and Leah. So here are the classic two sisters. We always have Leah as the one who was the one that got married first. So she was the one that was supposed to get chalitza. She goes into the Beis Din together with her sister Rachel. Rachel is married to George. He has no connection to this whole thing. People see these two women walking into court, and then they hear, oh, there was a chalitza today in the court. Do they know which of these women got the chalitza? No. So what if they get confused and they think that the chalitza was actually Rachel, who's married to George? So then what they would think is, oh, wow, I guess what happened over here is that George was the brother of this guy and he must have kicked the bucket. I don't know, right? So if George actually does die, then people will say, oh, this George, yeah, he's the brother of this guy. And that guy gave chalitza to his wife. which is ridiculous. He wasn't even related to her. It happened to be that that wife was the sister of the person that he did do chalitza to. She was Leah's sister. But because of the mistaken identity, says Rashi, I don't give a hang who she's married to, because if people will confuse her and think that she was the chalutza, then if sometime later, maybe years later, this guy who did Shimon, we always call him. So this guy Shimon, who did the chalitza to Reuven's wife, who we always call, remember, these are standard references, who we always call Leah, the first woman to marry. So people will think, oh my gosh, he married Rachel, sister? I mean, as a co-wife, the tzara? How could he do that? We saw him give chalitza to Rachel, which is ridiculous. He never gave chalitza to Rachel. He gave chalitza to Leah. So therefore, since Rachel and Leah are going to be going to court together, therefore, explains Rashi, there's a problem of mistaken identity. And because of the mistaken identity, it would have nothing to do whether it's talking about being married to a stranger or being married to a brother. Because in the same way they'll mistake the identity of the woman who got the chalitza, they will also make the assumption that George or whoever it is she's married to actually was a brother of Shimon. Why else would he have done chalitza? So once you start making that mistake, all the other mistakes follow naturally. Okay, so then that would mean that this idea of the Isser that we're talking about in the Mishnah of the case of the Tzorat Krovat Chalutzato is completely unrelated to the normal din of Tzora, which of course only affects Yibum, not other people. Now, Tosis, based on many of the Gemaras that we've already seen, shows that there doesn't seem to be any case where there is an Isser of Tzara that would apply to a non-Yibum circumstance. And therefore, Tosfos says, and indeed there are Gersaot that Tosfos brings, that what it's talking about over here is not the word da azla behada levedina, but rather da azla levedina. So, all it's referring to is this. Does the chalutza have to go to court? Yes. So she walks into court. When she comes out of the Rabbanut, people don't distinguish between that case and the case of all of their friends that went through hell to get a divorce and they were in court. So they just naturally associate this woman with the women that they knew that the court was making crazy to get a kosher divorce and so on. So to them, the divorcee and the chalutzi are the same thing. Because to them, the chalutza looks like a grusha. So because of that, we had to treat her as if she actually is a grusha. And we went ahead and we asered because of that. Look, if a guy was married to someone and he divorced her, he remains aser midiraisa to all of her relatives. Nothing changes just because he divorced her, right? So there it makes sense to make the takana that a chalutza should be treated precisely as a divorcee, and therefore she would pater also her tzara if she was married, of course, to a brother, not somebody else. Mashenkein, in the other case, I don't understand what would be the reason. Why would we even dream of saying that the relative of the tzara of the chalutza, the tzara of the chalutza doesn't walk into court? She's got nothing to do with this. She's on vacation in Miami. What the heck? Why would people think that she's similar to a grusha? Therefore, there's no basis for making the takana. That's also going to tell us it's very straightforward. It has nothing to do with mistaken identity. It has to do with the mistake of viewing chalitza as gerushin. According to Rashi, it affects even a non-Yibum case, and has to do with a straightforward mistaken identity of which of these two women who were in court is the true chalutza. That was the issue. Completely different Gemara.